The following is a sermon by Pastor Todd Dykstra, teaching pastor of Maranatha Bible Church of Comstock Park, Michigan. For more information, go to mbcmi.org.
Let's open our Bibles, please, to Proverbs chapter 3. Proverbs chapter 3. We continue our study through these opening chapters of Proverbs 1 through 9, which is all about God's wisdom. We have seen in chapter 2 the pursuit of wisdom and its importance, and we saw last week at the beginning of chapter 3 the blessings of wisdom, and as you can see, this morning we come to study the value of wisdom, the value of wisdom, and we just continue to hammer away at this theme of wisdom. Wisdom, as we've said, is the art of living godly unto God. It's a righteous life. It's a godly conduct before God that submits to Him in His Word. It is not just a collection of facts. It is not just an assembling of certain knowledge that you need to have. Wisdom, according to the book of Proverbs, is living righteously, living godly. And Solomon is making it very clear throughout this book that this is of critical importance, that we must reject the folly and the foolishness of this world. We must be those who live according to God's wisdom. I believe this is the eighth message already in Proverbs, and I was thinking and wondering, perhaps you're getting weary of hearing the same message preached over and over again, and yet I was thinking about that, essentially thinking, but we need to hear this. Maybe we're all a little bit weary of hearing of the importance of just we need to be wise and not foolish, and that's the theme that Solomon keeps hammering at. But if it takes 9 chapters to communicate that and an entire book to communicate that, is it not important for us to know this and be reminded of this on a regular basis? I was thinking about this and thinking the fact that we need to hear this frequently because every day we are faced with temptations to live foolishly. Every day we are faced with opportunities to engage in behavior and conduct that is contrary to God. Every day we are faced with the temptation to choose the call of folly over the call of wisdom, to gratify our flesh and its desires over submitting to God and His wisdom. So I don't think it's hard for us to hear these truths on a regular basis because sin deceives us. And sin wants to trick us into thinking that God's wisdom is not the best way and the way of the world is better and more satisfying. Sin will want to deceive you on a regular basis into thinking that. So we need regular reminders of the importance of living according to God's wisdom. You need that. And I need that. And so this morning we come to hear this message again from a different angle, from a different perspective, but all the same message that we need God's wisdom and we must live according to it. We've said already that Proverbs 1 to 9 is comprised of a series of 10 lectures, 10 sermons from Solomon to his son, this young man who is about ready to embark upon life. He's in his mid-teens, maybe his late teens. He's about ready to head off into the world. And Solomon sits his son down for maybe one of the last father-son talks. And he's pleading with his son to pursue wisdom at all costs. That pursuing wisdom is worth it. 10 sermons, 10 lectures where Solomon pleads with his son to listen to the call of wisdom and follow it with all of his heart. We're in the third lecture. We saw the beginning of it last week in chapter 3, verses 1 to 12. We come this morning to verses 13 to 35. And just by way of reminder, last week we saw that there's this marvelous structure that Solomon uses to open this chapter with. In the verses 1 to 12, every odd verse is a command and every even verse is a blessing. You can see it in your own Bibles. Just look at verse 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, 11. They're all commands. Do this. And the even verses are all blessings and rewards. Verse 2, verse 4, verse 6, 8, 10, 12 are all blessings that come to those who do what is commanded in those odd verses. Well, this morning, Solomon abandons that structure, but he comes back to teach us the importance of wisdom. This morning, we come to see the value of it. And if you've ever wondered whether God's ways are best, you need to listen to these next 23 verses, because they ought to convince you that wisdom is worth following. It's worth it. No matter what anyone says, no matter what you feel, no matter what your flesh is crying out for, wisdom, God's ways are worth it. And I want to show you those this morning. I want to show you some ways that we know it's worth it. And I want to show you some ways that we know it's valuable. Four ways. Four ways that we know wisdom is valuable and worth following. So let's unpack these together. First, number one, the first way that we know about this is the value of wisdom to mankind. The value of wisdom to mankind. Solomon's going to start general, then he's going to get specific. In verses 13 to 18, he's going to deal with the issue of wisdom to mankind in a general, kind of broad fashion. So I want you to notice verse 13. He says, "How blessed is the man who finds wisdom, and the man who gains understanding." You can see he's speaking generally. He's speaking broadly here. The word man occurs twice in that verse. He's speaking generally to all people, to all mankind, to humanity in general. He's speaking to as many people as possible. How blessed is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding. Notice the verbs here. The man who finds this. The man who gains this. This is not the person who just stumbles into wisdom. This is just not the person who happens upon wisdom by some chance. The person that Solomon has in mind here is the person who diligently seeks this wisdom, who pursues it, who wants it, who craves it, who hungers for it, who thirsts for it, who is actually seeking it out because they understand that in order to live rightly in God's moral order that He has designed, we have to live righteously according to His wisdom. And so the wise person seeks this out. The question I have for you at this point is that you? Is that you? Are you the person just kind of hoping to stumble upon God's wisdom and find some nugget of it by chance? If that's you, then you're not going to appreciate the value of wisdom as is described here. Solomon says this is for the person who seeks it, who looks for it, who craves it, and who hungers for it. Notice what happens to this individual. Verse 13, blessed is this person. Blessed is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding. We could actually say happy. Happy is this person. It's no secret that this is what the world wants. This is what the world is after. The world is desperate for happiness. If you just go and listen to the world's wisdom, if you just go listen to the world's ways, it becomes very obvious that this is what the world is wanting. They want happiness. They want some level of satisfaction. There was a song not too many years ago, right? Don't worry, be happy. This is what the world craves. They crave some level of happiness. And so the world is chasing after this. There's this never ending, maddening pursuit to find some happiness. And Solomon tells us where it comes from. Solomon tells us in this verse, happy is the man who finds wisdom. Blessed is the man. This is the person who experiences life optimally as God has designed it. That's what blessed means. It means to experience life to the fullness as God intended it to be. That person is blessed and happy. It reminds me of Psalm 1. One of my favorite psalms. Psalm 1, he says, the psalmist does, "How blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, nor stand in the path of sinners, nor sit in the seat of scoffers, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night." And what happens to the person who meditates upon God's law and his wisdom? Psalm 1 verse 3 says, "He will be like a tree firmly planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in its season, and its leaf does not wither, and whatever he does, he prospers." You want to be happy? You want to be blessed? You're going to be the person who lives according to God's ways. Jesus picked this up. Remember the Beatitudes? Matthew chapter 5, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the gentle. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the pure in heart. Jesus understood this. Happiness and blessing come to those who live according to God's ways. How do we know this? Or how specifically does this result in blessing? Well, in verses 14 to 18, Solomon's going to give us a couple manifestations of the blessings that come to those who seek God's wisdom. So these are not on the slides. You may want to just jot these down. A couple ways that wisdom benefits mankind. Here's one. It results in incomparable returns. Wisdom results in incomparable returns. Notice verses 14 and 15. For, here's the reason, or here's the manifestation, or here's the description. So blessed is the man who lives according to God's ways, for, here's how we know this is true, her profit is better than the profit of silver, and her gain better than fine gold. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire compares with her. Notice, silver, gold, jewels. We're not quite sure what the word jewels mean. It could refer to rubies or jewelry or red coral, which was prized in that day. But regardless, he's saying that there are some things that the world considers to be important, like silver and gold and jewels. And Solomon says, yet better than all of that is wisdom. It gives you a better return. In fact, as one writer says, wisdom makes you a richer man more than money ever will. Do you believe that? Do you believe that wisdom will make you more profitable than silver or gold or earthly treasures? I don't think most people believe that. I'm not sure most people in the world actually really believe that. They believe that earthly treasures and wisdom, or not wisdom, but earthly treasures and money and silver and gold and all that the world has to offer, I think they believe that that is what makes you rich. But Solomon is very clear here that it's wisdom that makes you a richer man than money ever will. And to prove that, notice verses 14 and 15. Notice he uses some language of the investor. Notice he uses the word profit twice in verse 14, and he uses the word her gain is better than fine gold. Those are terms referring to the investor. It refers to the person who engages in trading of stocks and the person who's investing their money hoping for big returns and yields that are huge. Is not this the goal of trading? Is this not the goal of investing? You're investing in that which will give you the biggest dividends. I was reading just this week, maybe you read the article, a Cripplegate article this week, on a man by the name of Michael Burry. He was a doctor. He was a brain surgeon who found brain surgery getting to be boring. And so he began to play around with investments. And he was very successful. He was able to pick the right trades, and he was able to get all kinds of returns, and so he started his own fund, a hedge fund called Scion Capital, and in the first couple years, it outperformed every other hedge fund in the world by leaps and bounds until 2007, and in 2007, Michael Burry thought that something was going to happen in the market. He thought that the housing market was going to crash, and so he took all of his investors' money, and he poured it all into one basket. And his investors weren't very happy. And they began appealing this, and they began asking for their money back, and they thought he was crazy, and they tried to withdraw their funds, but their contracts prevented them from doing this. And so he proceeded, telling them, just trust me a little bit longer, and you know what happened in 2008. Stock market crashed. And in that one trade, he made $100 million. And for his investors, he made $700 million. And from 2001 to 2008, his fund recorded a return of 489%. 7 years, almost 500% return. That's a pretty good return. Solomon says, wisdom gives you better returns than that. Solomon's whole point here is better than the riches that come from earthly treasures are the riches that come from the yields you get from investing in wisdom. Wisdom is off the charts in terms of its return. And notice verse 15, he goes on to say, and nothing you desire compares with her. Can I ask you this morning, do you believe that? Do you believe that? That nothing you desire compares to knowing God and His ways and living under that. Do you believe that to be true? Because I'm not sure most people do. But I have a house, a car, need to make money, I need some investments, need to plan for the future, I have stuff to buy, got a career to build. Not all bad stuff. But do you believe what Solomon says here? That nothing you desire compares with her. So what are you investing in? Are you investing in the temporary, transitory, fleeting things of this world that have very limited returns, or are you investing in that which has eternal and high yields for your life in the present? Solomon says, if you're investing in what this life has to offer, if you're investing in this world, and if you're investing in earthly treasures, then you're investing in things which have low returns and low values. So his point is it results in incomparable returns. Incomparable returns. There's a second thing he tells us here in these verses. There's another blessing that comes to those who understand wisdom. It results in quality life. Again, this is not up on the screen, but you may want to jot it down. It results in quality life. Notice verse 16 and 17. He says, long life is in her hand. In her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are pleasant ways, and all her paths are peace. Here, Solomon personifies wisdom again. He presents wisdom as a woman, and in this case, she's presented as a woman with two hands, a right hand and a left hand, and in those hands are gifts that she's willing to give liberally and give generously to anyone who will take of them. Here's Lady Wisdom, a gracious lady, offering gifts in both hands. She's extending them. She's offering them to any who will listen and any who will receive them. And in her right hand is long life, and in her left hand, according to verse 16, are riches and honor. So here are some of the blessings that will come to your life, to mankind in general, if you are willing to invest your life in wisdom, to receive her, to embrace her, to allow her to penetrate your heart and your mind and live according to her ways. You will receive, first of all, a long life. Again, this is not a guarantee. It's not a promise that everything is going to happen exactly. These are general rules and principles, but generally you're going to live a long life. There'll be longevity in your life as a sign of God's blessing upon you if you're a person who commits yourself to God's ways. This was particularly important for Israelites who saw longevity as a sign of God's blessing upon them and their nation. Notice the next thing that comes to you, verse 16, you receive riches and honor. Again, not a guarantee that you're always going to be rich. That doesn't guarantee the health, wealth, prosperity gospel. That is not what he's talking about here. But he's saying you're going to have material blessings. God will take care of your needs. And not only that, you're going to be crowned with honor if you live your life according to God and his ways. Notice verse 4. Skip up to verse 4. We saw this. If you live by wisdom, verse 4 says, you will find favor and good repute in the sight of God and man. Beloved, is that not what we want? To have a good reputation among men and before God? Is this not what we should crave and desire, is to be those who are commended in the sight of God and man? This is what it means to be honored by the Lord. If we honor him, he will honor those who honor him. Notice verse 17. Here's some more quality life descriptions. Verse 17 says, her ways are pleasant ways and all her paths are peace, meaning there's going to be a joyful life. There's going to be a blessed life. And your paths will be filled with peace, meaning they'll be characterized by wholeness and health and harmony and unity. It's not a promise of trouble-free life. It's not a promise that you're never going to get sick. It's none of that at all. But it's a promise that in general, your life is going to be blessed by the Lord and you will be knowing peaceful paths before you. Notice verse 18. She is a tree of life to those who take hold of her, and happy, here we are again, happy are those who hold her fast. So verse 13, he starts with, blessed are those who pursue this wisdom. Verse 18, he comes and kind of wraps this section up by saying, happy are those who hold her fast. Interesting, verse 18, he talks about a tree of life here. A tree of life. And if you remember, if you know your Bibles, you know the book, the Bible begins and ends with a tree of life. Genesis chapter 2 talks about a tree of life. God placed that tree in the garden and told Adam and Eve they could eat from that tree. It's a tree that sustained them. It was a tree that gave them life and nourishment. God told them not to eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. They disobeyed, they rebelled against God, and God kicked them out of the garden. You know what one of the reasons why he kicked them out of the garden? It was an act of mercy. So they wouldn't go and eat of the tree of life after they ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and fell into sin and would perpetually live in a state of disobedience before God eternally. It was an act of mercy that God kicked them out of the garden, so they would not eat of the tree of life and live forever in that condition. Revelation 22 speaks of the tree of life. This thing that gives life and sustenance. And Solomon's point here in referring to that is that's what wisdom does. Wisdom is a tree of life. It gives you source of life. It gives you sustenance. It sustains you. And that's why Solomon can say in verse 18, happy are all who hold her fast. Happy are all who hold her fast. And I ask you this morning, does that describe you? Do you hold fast to God's wisdom? Have you come to a point where you recognize how crucial and how valuable wisdom is to your existence? You need it, you crave it, you desperately desire it, and you are holding fast to God and his word, hiding his word in your heart, living according to his ways, because you know there is the way of blessing. So this is the value of wisdom to mankind. Solomon comes to point number two. The value of wisdom to God. I find this absolutely fascinating. If it were me, I would have gone from the value of wisdom to mankind to the value of wisdom, which we'll see next, to the Son, starting in verse 21. But Solomon does something very interesting in verses 19 and 20. He actually corroborates his point and proves his point that wisdom is essential to our lives by showing that God needed wisdom and God used wisdom in the creation of this world. Notice verses 19 and 20. He says, the Lord by wisdom founded the earth. By understanding he established the heavens. By his knowledge the deeps were broken up and the skies drip with dew. Notice the synonyms here for wisdom. Wisdom, understanding, knowledge. Solomon's point here is when God created the world, he used wisdom. He needed wisdom to create all that exists and all that we see around us. In fact, notice, let's pick these verses apart just a moment. Notice verse 19, the Lord by wisdom founded the earth. Does that sound like Genesis 1:1? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. What went into that? Wisdom. Notice the next part of verse 19, and by understanding that he established the heavens. That's again Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. How did God create the heavens? How did he create the stars and the planets and the universes and the galaxies? How did he do that? By wisdom. Notice verse 20. He made the oceans and all that is in them by his wisdom. He says, by his knowledge, the deeps were broken up. How did God create the oceans? How did God create all the sea life? How did God create everything that is in the oceans? By wisdom. And then notice the end of verse 20. And the skies drip with dew. Maybe we don't appreciate this as much where we live, but if you were an Israelite living at that time, there were no summer rains. And the only way to get rain or moisture into the arid region was for at night, the winds would blow in moisture off the sea, and they were dependent upon that dew at night for the plants and gathering some water at night. How did God come up with that plan? What went into the whole hydrological cycle in giving us water? Wisdom. By wisdom, God made everything that exists. By wisdom, God created everything that we see around us. By wisdom, everything works the way that it currently works. Hold your finger here in Proverbs 3 and turn just for a moment over to Proverbs 8. We're going to see this a little bit more in just a few weeks, whenever we get there. But Proverbs 8, verse 22 to 31, notice he does the same thing here in these verses. He shows how God uses and used wisdom to create all that exists. Notice Proverbs 8, verse 21. The Lord possessed me, this is wisdom speaking, at the beginning of his way before his works of old. From everlasting I was established. From the beginning, from the earliest times of the earth, when there were no depths. Notice all the creation terminology in these verses. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no springs abounding with water. Before the mountains were settled, before the hills, I was brought forth. While he had not yet made the earth and the fields, nor the fine dust of the world. When he established the heavens, I was there. When he inscribed a circle on the face of the deep. When he made firm the skies above. When the springs of the deep became fixed. When he set for the sea its boundary so that the water would not transgress his command. When he marked out the foundation of the earth. Then I was beside him as a master workman. And I was daily his delight. Rejoicing always before him. Rejoicing in the world, his earth. And having my delight in the sons of men. How did God create all that exists? By his infinite wisdom. Go back to Proverbs 3. I have a confession to make. Friday night at our house is movie night. And our kids will oftentimes, you know, list off all the movies that they want to watch that night. And usually the top of my list is Planet Earth. Maybe not the most exciting thing to watch, but that is fascinating. Watching all that exists in this world and the plant life and the animal life and how the world functions, it's just, I could watch that for hours. It's absolutely fascinating. And God came up with all of that. God in his wisdom designed all of that by his ways, by his plans, by his design. All of that we see, all of creation, all of its diversity, all of its beauty, all of its wonder was created and designed by God in infinite wisdom. And Solomon's point is this. If God could create all of the incredible things that we see on the earth, think about what God will do through your life with that same wisdom. That's his point. If God needed wisdom to create this world, how much more don't we need wisdom to live in the world he created? He's showing us the superiority of wisdom, the importance of wisdom, the value of wisdom. And so I ask you this morning, do you understand and do you value wisdom like this? If God needed this, if God used this wisdom to bring into existence all that we see, the mountains and the trees and the birds and the plants and the animals and the stars and the planets and the galaxies and the insects and humans and everything that exists. If God put into all of that his wisdom, then how much more do we not need that same wisdom to live in this world? So the question is, are you immersing yourself in God's wisdom? And more importantly, is it transforming your heart? Is it transforming your mind? Is it changing how you think? Is it changing how you act? Are you living according to that wisdom when folly comes crying at your door and giving you the temptations and offering you opportunities to sin, and your heart begins to contemplate those desires, and you have these desires that are deceiving you and wanting you and tempting you into sin? In that moment, are you choosing to live by God's wisdom, or are you choosing to live by those vices? There's a third truth that helps us understand the value of wisdom here. It's the value of wisdom to us, specifically to the Son, but for us, we're going to apply it to ourselves. The value of wisdom to us, I want you to notice in verse 21, he begins to talk to his son. As I said, this is another father-son conversation. Here's Solomon sitting with his almost adult son, ready to hit the world, ready to embark upon the world, ready to take the world by its horns, ready to go make his mark upon the world. And Solomon sits his son down and looks in his eyes and says, "Hey, son, you need to understand the importance and the value of wisdom, and you need to embrace it yourself." You see, Solomon knows something about young people. Kids, listen up. Teenagers, college students, listen. If you've been raised in a home where your parents have loved you enough to teach you the scriptures and point you to Christ and flood your mind with the truth of God's word and wisdom, if they've disciplined you and they've taught you and instructed you, that is God's grace to you. That is God's kindness to you in allowing you to be raised in a Christian home where you've been taught from your youth about the things of the Lord and the important things of Christ. And they've taught you about the gospel, and they've informed your mind and your heart about the things that matter most, eternal matters. That is a blessing that you are living under. But listen, at some point in your life, you need to decide whether you're going to embrace that for yourself or not. You need to make a decision at some point, probably in your late teens and early 20s at the absolute latest. You've got to make a decision about whether you're going to embrace what mom and dad have taught you or reject it. You've got to either own it or say, "I want no part of it." Solomon understands this. Solomon knows that his son can't just ride the coattails of his faith and can't just ride the coattails of his instruction. Solomon understands something that every godly parent understands. They understand at some point their child has to make a decision to know and love these things for themselves. They've got to own it themselves. They've got to make a choice for it for themselves, and they need to make the choice over folly when it's staring them in their face. And so Solomon, being the wise parent here, implores his son. Notice verse 21. "My son, let them," the "them" is the principles of wisdom, "let them not vanish from your sight. Keep sound wisdom and discretion." Literally, don't even begin to let them out of your sight. Don't let the things I've taught you, don't let the principles of wisdom that I've tried to instruct you in, don't let them leave your visual field. Don't ever let them go out of your mind, and don't let them go out of your heart and out of your life. You've got to be a young man, you've got to be a young woman who embraces wisdom. search for it, know it, love it, seek it, treasure it, and allow it to transform how you live your life. You can almost hear Solomon saying it, can't you? Son, I'm older than you. I've lived life. I know where it goes if you choose the path of folly. So listen to me, please. I beseech you, as a father to the son, embrace wisdom. Why? Well, notice verses 22 to 26. He puts the carrot out there. And parents, sometimes you need to do this with your kids. Sometimes you need to have the conversation where you're talking to your kids and you're saying, listen, here's why I'm telling you these things. I'm not just trying to be mean. I'm not trying to rain on your parade. I'm not trying to control your life. I'm trying to point you in the direction of wisdom, because here's what's going to happen to you. Here are the blessings that will come to your life if you choose this path of wisdom that I've taught you about. Solomon does the same thing here. He puts the carrot out. He puts the motivation out. He puts the incentive out, and he begins to give some specific blessings that come to those who will choose to live their life according to God's ways. And so notice a few of them. Verse 22 is the first one. They will be life to your soul and adornment to your neck. They're going to bless your soul. They're going to be an encouragement to your spiritual life. They're going to motivate you in the things of the Lord. And they're going to be an adornment around your neck, meaning it's going to make you attractive. The world's going to see your life and they're going to see something different about you. They're going to notice something is unique about you. Your life is going to be attractive. Notice another one in verse 23. You will walk in your ways securely and your foot will not stumble. You'll have safety in this life. In other words, you're going to avoid many of life's troubles. If you want to be a young person, or if you want to be an old person who avoids a lot of the problems in this life, then you need to live according to God's ways, because in that walk, you will walk securely and your foot will not stumble. Notice another one in verse 24, one of my favorite ones. When you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet. You'll have peaceful sleep. When you live according to God's ways, you can rest your head on the pillow at night. And you can go to sleep and have a good night of rest. Your mind's not going to be racing. It's not going to be fitful sleep. It's not going to be restless sleep. You're not going to be laying there with your mind racing about all the things you've been doing and the guilt and the problems and the temptations. Your mind's not going to be captured by all the things that you knew you should be doing and aren't doing, and the guilt that comes from sin in your life and the foolishness of choices that you've made. You're not going to lay there at night at 2 or 3 or 4 in the morning regretting those things. You're going to be able to sleep. It's the best sleeping pill you could ever take. I sleep really good at night. Well, for the most part, I'm getting old, and I don't sleep as well as I did when I was in my 20s. But I sleep really good. My head hits the pillow, and I'm out. This is God's grace to those who walk in his ways. Verse 25, there's another one. Do not be afraid of sudden fear, nor of the onslaught of the wicked when it comes. You're not going to be afraid. You're not going to be living life full of anxiety, full of fear, full of worry. Listen, I've been in ministry long enough to know that there are a lot of people in the church whose lives are full of anxiety and fear and worry. And Solomon says one of the ways you free yourself from that, one of the ways you combat that, is by living according to his wisdom. Why? Notice verse 26. For Why do all these blessings accrue to someone who lives according to God's ways? Notice verse 26. This is so good. For the Lord will be your confidence, and you will keep your foot from being caught. Literally, the Lord will be at your side. Man, is that not encouraging? Is that not a blessing to your soul? When you live according to God's ways, His powerful presence is with you. He blesses you. He's there. He's walking with you. He's right by your side. And that is our confidence. And I cannot think of a better confidence than that. Knowing that whatever I'm doing, wherever I am, whatever's going on, no matter what's taking place in my life, there is God's presence with me as a comfort, as a guide, as a help, as an encouragement, as an anchor in which I can place my confidence and my trust. That's what wisdom does. Wisdom points you away from confidence in yourself. Wisdom points you away from trusting in yourself. Wisdom points you away from thinking you've got this all figured out. Wisdom points you away from thinking I've got this wired, I can handle this on my own. Wisdom points you away from your selfish, independent, resourceful desire to get through this on your own. And wisdom says there's a God who's walking with you through this. Beloved, that's good. I remember early in our marriage, some difficult trials we were going through, we came across Psalm 73. Whom have I in heaven but you, and besides you I desire nothing on earth. My flesh and heart are weak and may fail, but God is the strength of my life and my portion forever. I'll tell you, that was a balm to our souls. Know that in the midst of that life, in the midst of that trial, in the midst of that circumstance, there was a God in whom we could place our confidence. He was worthy of our trust. He was worthy of our praise. He was worthy of our confidence. He was worthy of our joy. He was worthy of us entrusting those situations to Him. And that's what wisdom taught us. And I can tell you that that is still true today, and you can attest to the same thing. Wisdom makes us hope in God, not ourselves. So I wonder this morning, what are you putting your confidence in? What are you putting your confidence in? Is it your work, your portfolio, your house, your ability to make money? What is it you're putting your confidence in? Wisdom points us away from ourselves. And wisdom makes us trust God and place our confidence in Him. And beloved, I can't think of a better verse right now than that verse right there, verse 26, because our world is messed up. I mean, I don't remember a time, maybe the Rodney King riots. Some of you were alive during the 60s, you remember those riots. We're living in a world that is upside down. Looting, violence, upheaval, opposition to government, attempts to defund a police force in clear opposition to Romans 13. We're living in a world that is absolutely upside down, crazed, sinful, depraved. Where do we turn in a time like that? Where verse 26 tells us, the Lord will be your confidence. Is He your confidence right now, whatever you're facing? Whatever you're going through, whatever struggle, whatever trial, whatever difficulty you are facing right now, can you say with Solomon in verse 26, the Lord is my confidence? Number four. There's a fourth way to prove the value of wisdom. It's the value of wisdom in relationships. Solomon ends this third lecture in verses 27 to 35. I know it's a larger section, but we're going to go through it fairly quickly. He says, you can test whether you're living according to God's wisdom by how well your relationships go. In other words, your relationships are a barometer of whether you're wise or foolish. So you could, in a sense, gauge the level of your wise versus foolish living simply by testing and evaluating the relationships around you with your spouse, with your kids, with your neighbors, with your coworkers, with your friends. The health of those relationships is often an indicator of whether you're being wise or foolish. And so in verses 27 to 31, Solomon is going to give five samples of relationships with others that manifest when wisdom is evident in that person's life. And I want you to notice in verses 27 through 31, they all begin with a do not phrase. So Solomon is grabbing some samples of relationships, and what he's doing is he's going to say, listen, these are ways that you could test whether you're wise based on your interactions with others. So quickly, let's survey these. Verse 27, do not withhold good from those to whom it is due what is in your power to do it. Wisdom teaches us that when someone around us is in need, we meet that need. Wisdom teaches us to fulfill our obligation to do good to others, to help others when they're in need. That's an evidence of relationships that are going to be governed by God's wisdom. You're going to see a need. Someone around you needs something. You're able to meet that need. You're not going to withhold it. You're going to meet that need as soon as you can. Notice verse 28, something similar but more specific. Do not say to your neighbor, go and come back, and tomorrow I will give it when you have it with you. In other words, don't procrastinate. Don't send someone away who has a need, trying to come up with excuses for how to get out of meeting that need. When you have the ability to meet that need, go ahead and meet that need. That's what wisdom says. Don't figure out reasons to help them and hope that they'll maybe come back and you can give them an excuse. No, if you have the means to meet a need, do it. That's what wisdom teaches us. Verse 29, do not devise harm against your neighbor while he lives securely beside you. Don't take advantage of your neighbor's trust. Don't take advantage of someone who depends upon you for their protection. Don't abuse your wife, your husband, your kids. Don't be an oppressor to those around you. Don't be violent with people. Verse 30, do not contend with a man without cause. If he has done you no harm, don't resent someone just because you don't like something about them. Wisdom says you're not going to argue and get upset with that individual. You're going to love them and serve them and care for them. And then verse 31, do not envy a man of violence. And do not choose any of his ways. In other words, don't secretly wish to be a lawbreaker yourself. You ever wish that? Man, they can get away with it. They have all the fun. They can engage in all kinds of illicit, inappropriate behavior, and they can get away with that. Man, I just wish I could do some of that. Don't secretly be jealous of the wicked and what they're getting away with, Solomon says. These are how you know if your life is governed by wisdom. Notice how he closes this chapter out, verse 32 to 35. For the devious are an abomination to the Lord. Notice the contrast in these closing verses. He's going to contrast the way of wisdom and the way of folly. For the devious are an abomination to the Lord, but he is intimate with the upright. The curse of the Lord is on the house of the wicked, but he blesses the dwelling of the righteous. Though he scoffs at the scoffers, yet he gives grace to the afflicted. The wise will inherit honor, but fools display dishonor. See how he closes this? He's comparing and contrasting. Wisdom always leads to God's blessing. Folly always leads to God's curses. Notice verse 32, something we don't talk about a lot. The devious are an abomination to the Lord. Do you know that God hates certain things? We're going to come to it in Proverbs chapter 6. We're going to see exactly what God hates. But there's a certain reference here to the fact that God hates the devious. He hates the wicked. So how do we ensure that we're not those kind of people? We walk according to his ways. And we experience his blessings because of it. So again, Solomon ends this chapter where he ends everything else. There's two ways. The way of wisdom or the way of folly. There's no third way. There's no third option. There's no in between. There's no neutral here. It's either you're for God or you're for the way of folly. There's nothing in between. And so Solomon's point to us and Solomon's point to his son is you live unto God. You live under God's ways and you will know his blessings. Would you pray with me? Lord, we are so thankful that you've not stuttered at all. We thank you for words from you which are clear, words which are concise, words which are able to be understood. We thank you, Father, that you do not mince your words. The wicked are an abomination to you. The way of folly always results in disaster. It always brings trouble. It always brings condemnation. And so, Father, let us not dabble in the ways of the wicked. Let us not flirt with the ways of folly. God, let us be those who are solely and entirely sold out to the ways that you have ordained in the Scriptures. Let us hold them fast. Let us run hard towards holiness. And God, let us be a people who would be known as having a good reputation before God and men for your honor and glory. It's in your Son's name we pray. Amen.
You've been listening to a sermon by Pastor Todd Dykstra, teaching pastor of Maranatha Bible Church in Comstock Park, Michigan, where we exist to display God's glory, declare God's truth, delight in God's Son, and disciple God's people. No part of this digital file may be reproduced or distributed without prior written consent. For permission, go to mbcmi.org.